Next week's Ashland Independent Film Festival fell just short of putting 100 films on the big screen, but the point is not quantity anyway. Quality films in a number of genres will be presented, including a number of notable documentaries. We'll discuss three of them here today with a change in guests at the bottom of the hour. Up first, the films Rich Hill and Running Wild, The Life of Dayton O. Hyde. Suzanne Mitchell is the director of Running Wild. She's one of our guests here on the Jefferson Exchange. Suzanne, welcome to you.
Thank you so much. This is so exciting. It's so exciting to get out of New York where it's been below zero for so long, or below freezing anyway, to come to the warm, damp West. I'm excited about that.
I'm glad to hear somebody excited about our weather, but it is strange. My sister was putting pictures on Facebook yesterday where there's 3 inches of snow in Southern Virginia. It just doesn't see, it seems to go on and on and on for you guys on the East Coast.
It does, so I'm so happy to be coming west.
Our other guest is Tracy Droz-Tragos. She's the co-director with her cousin Andrew Droz-Palermo of Rich Hill. Tracy, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm not going to tell you about the weather in L.A. because it's there are a lot of blue skies. So.
All right, fair enough. But tell us, if you would, a bit about yourself and your introduction to filmmaking. We'll start with you, Tracy.
My introduction to filmmaking has been sort of long in the making. I mean, I went to film school many years ago and thought I was going to be a screenwriter, but came across an account on the internet of the circumstances of my father's death in Vietnam one night, late at night, and that was really what propelled me to make my first documentary, which was a personal film about my journey to know my father, who I never had an opportunity to know, and that was called Be Good, Smile Pretty, and it was on Independent Lens a few years ago.
And it was a picture you actually found, taken on the last day of his life?
Well, it was actually it was an account of someone who was on his boat. He was a swift boat skipper and had witnessed him die. And it was an article. It was not only a photograph, but it was also a firsthand account of the ambush where my father lost his life. And it was information no one in my family had known before. And I was so overwhelmed with the outpouring of information and the way my mother was talking about my father. It was clear to me that I needed to pick up a camera and because I felt like something was going to get lost. And I just, you know, wanted to document what was happening in my family and how my mother was talking about my father for the first time in my entire life. So that was when the bug, you know, I got the documentary bug, I guess, and it changed my life.
All right. So, again, that was Be Good, Smile Pretty. You're the co-director of Rich Hill with your cousin. We'll talk more about this in a moment. I want to bring Suzanne Mitchell into the conversation here. You're already an Emmy winner for your work, Suzanne. Is that correct?
Well, I started in television, and, you know, as a filmmaker, you create content now for all different types of media, right? It could be for the web. It could be for television. And I always appreciated, I came from television news, and I appreciated long-form storytelling, something you couldn't do in a one-and-a-half-minute quick piece for the nightly news. So my career sort of morphed into more long-form television specials and made-for-TV documentaries. And then I've been working with Barbara Coppola as her producer for many years, and through a few television projects, I was introduced to Dayton Hyde, and I say that because I got to meet him in 92, so now you know how long this project has been in my mind. And then I got to revisit him again in 96 when I was working for Barbara on a project that was going to be shown on television. And it was at that moment where I really realized I had to make a film about this man, because he was really, the pieces that I had done before were part of television specials. So although they were not a minute and a half on the nightly news, they were still only about 3.5 or at the longest maybe 5.5 minutes. But his life was so rich, and is so rich. He comes from Oregon. He's a local. He's from Klamath Falls. That I really thought it deserved a much longer piece. And here we are now with a feature-length documentary, and it's so exciting. And I'm so excited because his family is coming, and they have not seen it theatrically yet. They live in a very rural part of your state, so it will be great next Friday.
All right. Sounds good. In case anybody's wondering about the context here, having worked in television news for many years myself, I heard third hand the expression that even the second coming of Jesus would get a minute 30 on the evening news.
true. And it probably is shrinking every day as more and more people go to the internet. So.
Yeah, right, trying to make things more digestible in length. So having known Dayton Hyde for as long as you did, having known him since 1992, was there a particular trigger that really started the project in earnest?
My credit card. Like so many of us filmmakers, you know, we start everything because it's a passion project, and then eventually we have to figure out how we're going to pay for it. And Dayton said something to me in 2001. It was actually late 2001, after the Trade Center came down. He said, you know, I never saw a hearse pulling a U-Haul full of stuff behind it before. And his life takes a dramatic turn when he's 62 years old, and he starts a whole new adventure where he creates a 13,000 wild horse sanctuary in the Black Hills of South Dakota and basically leaves his family in Oregon to tend to the family ranch while he starts a whole new chapter of his life. And I thought if he could do that at 62, I certainly could do it at a much younger age in starting this film. And Barbara, again, who's a mentor of mine, said, you know, if you don't start it, you'll never finish it. So even though it was percolating for all those years, I think it was, you know, in late 2001 where I finally decided okay. that Dayton wasn't getting any younger and I needed to get moving.
All right, back with Suzanne Mitchell and Tracy Droz-Tragos in just a moment here on the Jefferson Exchange. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today to some of the documentary filmmakers whose works are being featured at next week's Ashland Independent Film Festival. We have two guests with us now. We'll change guests around the bottom of the hour. Right now we're talking to Tracy Droz-Tragos. She's the co-director of the film Rich Hill with her cousin Andrew Droz-Palermo. Suzanne Mitchell is with us as well. She's the director of Running Wild, The Life of Dayton O. Hyde. You can join our discussion here on the Jefferson Exchange. Phone numbers 800-838-3760 in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Tracy, we had talked to you already about your earlier documentary, Be Good, Smile Pretty, about the revelations about finding things out about your father who died in Vietnam. You never really knew him. And so Rich Hill really takes us further into his backstory, is that right?
Well, in a way, yes. I mean, Rich Hill is the place where he grew up. You know, it's my family hometown. And, you know, when I was growing up, it was also the place that I would visit every summer and winter break. My mother is a working mom, and so when school was out, she'd have to figure out a place to send me, and she would send me to Rich Hill. And it was just a very formative place for me growing up. I would stay with my grandparents, my father's parents, who were very, very near and dear to me. My grandmother, rather, was a third grade school teacher, and my grandfather was the rural mail carrier. So they were very well known in town, you know, because either they got the mail from my grandfather or were taught by my grandmother. So that was, that's the connection to my father.
So it's a town you knew. It's a town where he grew up. Anything particularly noteworthy about Rich Hill? It sounds like it's a town whose best days are probably decades behind it.
Well, it's you know, to be honest, it's pretty average. You know, it's not even particularly impoverished. It's not particularly, it doesn't have any industry. It used to have coal, which was why it was called Rich Hill. That's how it got its name. But people are struggling, like many, many communities that, you know, we drive by or fly over. It is, you know, families are struggling because there are few jobs and they don't have enough money for gas, and if car breaks down, you're really stuck and isolated. And when Andrew and I started talking about this film, we hoped that we could not only you know, give voice to the families there who seem so voiceless, but also still tell a story about what we loved about a place and what we loved about, you know, the family connections that we saw there. You know, not just a story of suffering, but also a story of, you know, in some ways hope and potential.
And so let me turn to Suzanne Mitchell now, the director of Running Wild, The Life of Dayton O. Hyde. You've set the stage for us pretty well. Dayton O. Hyde, a longtime rancher, family on the Klamath Basin. Went off to, late in life, went off to South Dakota for the 13,000 horse sanctuary.
13,000 acre horse sanctuary. But can I just back up and tell Tracy I'm so excited to see her film? And congratulations on your award at Sundance. I'm thrilled that I'm sharing this show with you. So I just wanted to.
Likewise. It's very kind. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm excited to meet you and hang out.
We'll definitely share stories. But in terms of Dayton's life story, you know, it did take a traumatic turn, like I said, when he was in his mid-60s. But the essence of Dayton is really born in Oregon. His dedication as a steward to the land and to the indigenous creatures who inhabit the western prairies is really born out of becoming a cowboy at age 13 when he ran away from home and wound up on the family ranch outside of Chiloquin, Oregon. And I want to say it was sort of exciting because, well, I knew about the ranch and I had visited it several times in the 90s when I was doing those television specials. We had an opportunity to be there when it celebrated its 100th anniversary of being in the Hyde family, just towards the tail end of me, you know, shooting this film. And just so you get an idea of how long it takes to make a film, in my case, we started this in very, very late 2001, early 2002, and we wrapped principal cinematography in late 2012.
Wow. So you're talking 11 years, basically, shooting.
Right, and then another year to edit. So, yeah.
So how much material did you have? This is a question for both of you, and I'm going to start with Suzanne again.
I would say, you know, we were shooting on a format that's expensive to shoot on. It wasn't film, but it was an expensive high-def format. And probably amassed couple of hundred hours of original footage, but then I had another couple of hundred hours of amazing archival footage. This family, they were shooting film just for historical record-taking of their own ranch. So there's some wonderful moments in Dayton's life, even in his rodeo days, that was all captured on film.
Wow, so lots and lots and lots of material to work with. And, of course, the editing process took a long time. Tracy Drost-Tragos, co-director of Rich Hill, when you and Andrew, your cousin, descended upon Rich Hill, it sounds like you just started shooting.
Basically. I mean, we cast a very wide net. And I think, you know, because our grandparents had been well-loved and well-known, we had kind of really amazing access. People were wonderful about letting us in and letting us be there.
So you were not viewed as outsiders, in other words.
Yes, I mean, we weren't. I mean, there is still somewhat of that kind of push-pull of, you know, I grew up primarily in a city. I grew up in Oakland, California, and so there's this feeling of, you know, being both an outsider and an insider, which I think was part of what drew me to make this film, because I'm always kind of angling to feel closer and closer and closer to this place that I love, and yet I'm always still somewhat circling the outside. But yes, we had wonderful access, and in large part we're just warmly welcomed and embraced. But we just cast a wide net. We didn't know what who the voice of our story would really be, through whose eyes we would tell the story, until we met these kids in school and went home with them in the school bus and really were welcomed in to the homes, and there was a feeling of wanting to tell their story, needing to tell their story. And then also we got a little bit of pushback from folks who said, why are you going into these homes? Why are you hanging out with them? And of course that only made us want to tell their story even more.
So how did is it Apache, Harley, and Andrew, the three guys you followed around?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And so what did you feel made them representative of the experience of living in Rich Hill?
Well, I'm not so sure it's the experience of living, you know, in Rich Hill. I mean, it's a very personal story. I think it's the experience of a lot of low-income families and a lot of kids who are kind of growing up on the edge of poverty and of, you know, either potential or misstep. And, you know, these kids were struggling, but they were also incredibly warm and funny and in some measure optimistic. Their hearts, when we first met them, hadn't, you know, been broken. I think by the end of our filming, I can't say that that was true for all of them. But I'll also say that there's another life that happens once a film is finished, and the families have participated with us now, and they've attended two festivals with us, and it's really an amazing experience to be there with them for Q&As and to see them interact with an audience and feel embraced and feel like they belong and feel like they're not being judged, but people are really wanting to lift them up, and that's quite an experience for them. And so I hope for all of them, you know, this will really be, you know, positively impact their lives ultimately.
Suzanne Mitchell, when you're making a movie that's really about one person and his life and all he's done, I mean, I suppose you could have the only person speaking in such a documentary be Dayton O'Hyde himself. I'm going to guess you probably chose a different way to do this, but boy, you're basically trying to tell a person's life story in about two and a half hours, right?
Right, and believe it or not, it's 92 minutes in the end. The film's an hour and a half, but, you know, an hour and a half, you really need a very, very rich character to work with. Because, you know, every minute of film has to pop off of the screen. Otherwise, you will lose your audience. So there haven't been that many people in my life, and believe me, I've done a lot of stories that have been whittled down either to a minute and a half to 10 minutes. But this man's story was so rich for so many reasons, and it touches so many nerves that audience members can relate to in their own lives, that I knew that it would work as a feature. And I hope you get to come out and see it, Jeff.
I hope so, too. Do you feel greater pressure as time goes on? I mean, obviously, the whole business that you came from, television news, has changed so much, and there's so much news on the Internet, and people have all these options. When I watch narrative films now, you know, things from the 60s, for example, they seem a whole lot slower based on the way that we view things today. Does that put a lot of pressure on you as a filmmaker to deliver something that, as you say, does pop pretty much every moment?
I think what's important is story. You know, it starts with the story and it ends with the story. And if you don't have a good story to tell, you can put all the glitz and glamour on the screen and make it look like an MTV music video from the 1980s, or take it up to today to put some YouTube, you know, touches on it to make it look, you know, as if the person created the film themselves. It doesn't matter. If the story's not good, it doesn't hold.
It's got to be a good story in the first place.
And I think, and you know, the whole landscape is changing. Just the other day, I was in Manhattan at a workshop on transmedia. And transmedia is using all different forms of storytelling to paint a picture about a single subject. So, in other words, using crowdsourcing through the Internet, creating a website that's vibrant, and a film. All of these things now are combined into something called transmedia. We're going to see a lot more of that. It'll be interesting to see how that morphs into the theatrical experience, because still the theatrical experience is a very passive experience. We want to be entertained. We want to learn something. We want to walk away with something. We don't want to have to do a lot for it, maybe just pay for the ticket to go to the theater or pay for the Netflix subscription to see it on the screen at home. But I think things will become more interactive in the next several years.
Why don't you ask each of you in turn, because we have to let you go and bring other guests in. But Tracy Droz-Tragos, the co-director of Rich Hill with Andrew Droz-Palermo, what do you want people to take away from Rich Hill? And do you feel like you really got to the essence of the story finally?
You know, I hope we did. I mean, at its heart, I think our film certainly isn't terribly poppy. And we really made a choice and committed to something that, you know, to a slower that was more immersive. We wanted to bring audiences close in to our families. We really wanted our audience to know and care about Andrew and Harley and Apache and have them be the authors of their story. And, you know, I feel like we were successful in that. I mean, these kids have said, you know, the best review is from them, where they say, you know, it's real. You told the truth. You told our truth. And, you know, at its heart, our film is an invitation to empathy. And we hope that with that empathy that may come up for people,
when they see this film that, you know, we can do a lot of good work and that we can be part of a conversation that that includes families like Andrews and Harleys and Apaches, you know, when we're talking about, you know, education and food stamps and, you know, people that might be living off the system. You know, these are people that have a lot of potential and, you know, that we hope are not written off. And that's why we are, you know, very, very proud and honored to tell their stories.
And that story will be told in Rich Hill on the screen at the Ashland Independent Film Festival starting next Thursday. Tracy Drost-Tragos, the co-director with Andrew Drost-Palermo, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having us.
You bet. Pleasure to have you here. And then, Suzanne, before you go, I want to ask you the same question as we're going to get our other guest hooked up here. What do you want people to take away from the life of Dayton O'Hyde?
Dayton has spent 89 years, his birthday was yesterday, as a steward to the land, giving back to the animals and to the ecosystem. And my hope is that his story will seep into every single person who sits in that audience, and they will take away with them the ability to act on their own dream. And it doesn't have to be an environmental dream. It could be anything that you want to do in life. If he could do it continually and still does it 89 years old and started this whole new life at 62, then any one of us can fulfill our dreams. And I think that is certainly the essence that, people are walking away with when they come to see the film. So it's about inspiration.
Sounds absolutely fascinating. Running Wild, The Life of Dayton O'Hyde is the subtitle of the movie.